Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
Welcome to the show. Happy Monday. I am Sean Drotsar. No, you don't have to do clock wrong. It's not the afternoon. It's Morning Drive. It's not Evening Drive. You can tell by, you know, the dark and no one's on the road yet. But Bruce Hurdle will join us in just a couple minutes. Eric Goodman is off. Delighted to join you today. Of course, an awful lot to talk about. We have the Avalanche with a terrific, terrific comeback yesterday against the Pittsburgh Penguins. You had a tremendous weekend for the Denver Nuggets facing the Portland Trailblazers. And I say tremendous because the game itself might not have been dazzling. But then again, for the Nuggets, that really wasn't the point. And that's where I'll kind of start before Bruce hops in here in just a little bit as he matriculates his way down the snowy thoroughfares in Denver. Because for the Nuggets, who ended up playing against the Portland Trailblazers without Nikola Jokic and without Jamal Murray, go ahead and get the win. Jokic and Murray, in that case, didn't even have to be on the trip. And you could still get a win. Now, that's because Portland at 19-52 is playing out the string. They started five rookies against the Nuggets. That's only the second time that's ever happened since box scores were tracked in the NBA. That's in the 40s, folks. That's only the second time a team's ever started five rookies. So the Nuggets get the job done closer than you might have liked at 114-111. But at this point, what you're talking about is just wins and losses. So the Nuggets get it done in a roundabout way. You actually had Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. Actually in the minus, in the old plus minus, despite the fact they were starters on a winning team. But Gordon with 22 points, 12 boards, 5 assists. Porter Jr. with 12 points, 9 boards, 3 assists. Neither of them shot the ball all that well, although Porter Jr. at 5 for 12, there's nothing wrong with that. But nowadays, when Porter Jr. is not at 50% or better, you wonder what's wrong with them. The Nuggets get that job done and now find themselves in an enviable position. They got their 50th win of the season, and the champs now are atop the Western Conference. The Oklahoma City Thunder lost to the Bucks last night, so the Nuggets now a half game ahead of Oklahoma City in the West. I know that not that long ago, they talked about the top seed not being a particularly high priority, and you understand that. But I think the truth of the matter is, it's a bigger deal for the Nuggets than anyone can imagine, because when you're talking about the built-in home court advantage in Denver, that altitude matters. When you're talking about the mental hurdle of realizing you're going into the champions gym and you have to beat them there, that's challenging. Nuggets at 15-21, 7.04 winning percentage. Away record now up to 22-15. The only teams in the West with more road wins, Minnesota and New Orleans, with 24 each. Nuggets win their third in a row. They've won 8 out of their last 10. And now they're a half game. So the opportunity for the Nuggets is immense. The odds on them getting through, if you're talking about getting to the finals once more, if the path runs through Denver, it's a monumental advantage, especially if they have that top, and they have that top seed, they can have it. For the rest of their schedule, it's pretty favorable. The Nuggets only have 4 road games left. They now come back after Portland for 5 in a row at home. They have 7 at home, 4 on the road. That's the remainder of the season. They'll get Memphis tonight. Then they get Phoenix on Wednesday. And then Minnesota on Friday. So you end up going through some of the contenders after Memphis, of course. Memphis is actually already eliminated from the playoffs, like Portland, 24-47. They're actually still five games ahead of Portland. That's how bad things are for Portland. But they will get the Suns. They will get the Timberwolves. And those are big games this week. So having the ability to rest Jokic and Murray was really advantageous. Now you have them to get a little bit more rest because they have been playing big minutes. They've been playing big minutes because the Nuggets have had an alarming tendency, even though they've gotten the wins in most of these cases. Remember, they've only lost two games since the 22nd of February. That's more than a month now. But they have had a tendency of playing with their food a little bit. Find themselves double digits down at points during the game and having to come back from it. And that means bigger minutes for Jokic and Murray. Jokic, of course, just carries a heavier load in general. And Murray, of course, has had injury history in the past, and he's had things that he's dealing with, the shin splints, that don't do anything except get better with rest. And they've had to play big minutes to go ahead and take these wins against teams that otherwise they probably should have just roasted. But now that those guys get a couple days off, basically could just chill in the places in Denver, and with the week in which they have no back-to-backs. In fact, the beauty of the Nuggets schedule is they have one more back-to-back. One. And it's not a bad one. On April 9th, they're on the road against Utah. And then they come back the next night, but it's in Denver, against Minnesota. So both teams have to travel. The Nuggets' travel can't be any shorter. Utah's the closest there is. And that's it. So a great opportunity to get Jokic and Murray rest down the stretch, a smart move by Michael Malone. It pays off with the win. Now they find themselves a half game up. The interesting part when you're looking at these breakdowns for the postseason in this last 11 games for the Nuggets is the fact that you're looking at their strength of schedule. The strength of schedule remaining in the West. Phoenix has the toughest actually in the entire league. 607 opposed winning percentage. That's the hardest there is. Sacramento at 558. New Orleans at 550. Oklahoma City at 541. The Clippers at 528. Those are all in the top 10 of the most difficult in the NBA with the games remaining. Phoenix at 1, Sacramento at 3, New Orleans at 4, OKC at 7, the Clippers at 9. Minnesota has a relatively easy schedule, 19th overall. And Denver has the 22nd overall. Only a 469 winning percentage. As a matter of fact, the Nuggets have the easiest remaining schedule in the entire Western Conference. And so now for the Nuggets in first place with the easiest schedule left in the Western Conference, they're in great shape if they just hold court in seven of those final 11 games at home. It doesn't make or break the Nuggets, but the move to rest Jokic and Murray entirely ends up being, I think, a very, very smart one as Bruce Hurdle joins us on a snowy and cold spring morning.
A dangerous one as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, very slick on the roads today.
This one kind of took a lot of people by surprise. It certainly took the five cars that are tangled on I-25 by surprise this morning. It is a very difficult commute for you if you're out there and about. The Nuggets, I'm glad that you started with the Nuggets. Even though you are festooned very nicely with the CU lid today.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yes, yes. There's plenty of things to get to. The move to rest Jokic and Murray when they're in the middle of a heated run for the top seed in a very crowded upper division of the Western Conference, to me, was very interesting. It takes one part understanding of really what the ultimate goal is, another part cojones, because I think that you still need to get home court advantage. So I'll start with this. How difficult is it for a coach, Michael Malone in this case, to balance one thing over the other? The well-being of a team, the need for a star to rest, still while chasing something that is still very tangible and I don't know if people think it's necessary, but a very important thing to have, which is home court advantage. It's a wonderful conundrum for me, but apparently it's not for Michael Malone.
It is a bit of a bold move. And you know what I think is interesting about it, Bruce, is that I don't think Michael Malone a couple of years ago would have done it. I think that Malone as a coach has evolved in a tremendous fashion because, look, for the majority of the time, and Michael Malone's been here a while, the coaches often are who they are, and they tend not to change very much. But Malone, and some of this I think is the confidence he has in Nikola Jokic, who functions in many ways as a coach on the floor, and even at times you will find Jokic with the whiteboard during a timeout. So, I mean, that's something that I think you have to give a ton
of credit.
I don't
know if I could read Serbian. That would be an interesting test for me.
But you're exactly right, because they're half game up because that game was one that they won. You find a way to lose that game, a game that should be a slam dunk, as I pointed out in the early going. It's only the second time five rookies started for an NBA team since box scores began.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it?
And as a result, that's a game you can't lose. Even without Jokic and Murray, even on the road, you can't lose it. Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon, and maybe Christian Brown or Reggie Jackson are better than anybody that the Blazers currently have,
right,
at least that night on the floor.
Sure.
So you can't blow it. So it does take a little bit of guts to sit those guys and gamble that maybe you blow that game, and who knows, a couple weeks from now you miss the top spot in the West by half a game. But I think it's also indicative of Malone's understanding now, because think about the great coaches who have, let's just go to Greg Popovich, who kind of started the load management idea, right? Mm-hmm. What's Greg Popovich known for? Winning rings.
Right.
Eric Spoelstra rest guys. What does he have?
Rings.
Steve Kerr rest guys. Rings.
And these are all rings, plural.
Yeah.
Not rings.
Once you win, I think that gives you the confidence and the clout to take those gambles, because you're thinking longer term, because you've been to the top of the mountain. Michael Malone has now been to the top of the mountain. And I think as a result, his perspective has changed. And he understands that the longer view, whether it's the top seed or even the second seed, were they to blow that game, the longer view is to get back to the finals and get a chance of winning it. And that is better served with Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray sitting out, even if that means a loss. For coaches who are not as secure in their position, I think that's a more difficult call. But it's not anymore for Michael Malone.
They're a better road team than they were a year ago already.
Yep.
The metrics support that. At 50-21, they are also three games better than they were at the exact same time a year ago. Now, the carrot at the end of the stick was the same, but the path to it was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is they were pretty much out there in clean air with no one really chasing them at this point last season. So are they a better team than they were at this point last season? My answer is clearly yes, because they have the experience of going 16-4 in the postseason. And that is probably the trump card that Michael Malone has right now. The belief that he's seen it, he knows what they're capable of, not only what they're capable of, what they have already done.
They've lost two games in more than a month.
Bingo.
In a month.
He's counting on that. And you know what? You're right. They did start five rookies. I'm talking about the Blazers in Portland. And the Nuggets were still with a contrived lineup and people playing all kinds of minutes they weren't used to. Gillespie coming up from the G League. It was just a nutty night. The Nuggets found a way to get it done in a game that, from the outside looking in, some would say, well, they didn't take it very seriously, but Michael Malone took it very seriously because he's got to get Nikola Jokic some rest and he's got to get Jamal Murray healthy. And that is job one. And that's what he was talking about basically 3 weeks ago when he said, this can't be the only thing that we're thinking about. We have other things that we have to occupy ourselves with. It's been very interesting, and so far, He's called everything right down the stretch. I mean, what, 14-2 since the All-Star break?
Right.
Come on.
Right. They're the best team in the league. They look like the best team in the league. Take the records out of it, because the team with the best record in the league is not always the best team in the league. Boston is an easier path in a softer conference.
Yes.
And, of course, we know that works out because they've played Boston twice, and they're 2-0.
Yep.
In Boston, where they dealt them their very first loss at home, and, of course, here in Denver not that long ago. So, yeah, the Nuggets have, and that's the part, it's a different objective. And a few years ago, Michael Malone treated all 82 games as if they were equally important as if you had to win every one of them.
Right.
And now he understands that that's not really the goal. The goal isn't the 82-game season. The goal is, how do you navigate the 82-game season to get yourself into a position to get to the finals? And there are different ways to do that, as explained by Popovich and Kerr and Spoelstra et al. Because these guys have the ability, and Malone is showing that he's getting it too. It's great to finish top. It's the top seed. It helps a lot. And I broke that down as well. The Nuggets being the top seed would greatly increase their chances of going to the finals. It would. But would you rather have a Nuggets team with the top seed that has some of its players burned out or exhausted?
It's a good question.
Or would you rather go in as the second or even third seed with a completely healthy Denver Nuggets team, giving the way they're playing? I'd take the lower seed. But I don't think the Nuggets have to.
No.
They have the easiest remaining schedule in the West. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah. Playing most of their games at home down the stretch. You use the term evolve, perspective. I'll throw out the term perspective. It's so interesting to me to watch coaches gain perspective. Guys that have forgotten more about the sports that they're coaching than I will certainly ever know, but they do continue to evolve and they do continue to learn, and they do learn different perspectives from times before. It's interesting. Michael Malone, for a guy that has taken a fair amount of heat, even maybe in his own community. And I never understood the jabs at Michael Malone, who to me was very, he just took very good steps towards building a program. He didn't try to do it too fast. I don't think you can do it too quickly in the NBA. I think that you do need to do it one step at a time. He was patient about it. He got great support, first from Tim Connelly, and now obviously Calvin Booth. Those pairings have worked well, and it has been a step-by-step process. But now it's been accelerated because of the magnification of what they've already won. They've won a championship, and now the margin for error is so thin because the only thing that matters now is winning another championship. Getting to the playoffs, that's not even a big deal anymore. And so the perspective changes because the evolution changes and the goal is tougher to get to because, you know, the pushback is going to be much more significant if you can't get there. It's an almost damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation. But there is no one out there, I think probably, that is more comfortable with the situation than Michael Malone, even though it's a harder road to hoe.
At this point, I think that's true. And I think if we would have said that 4 or 5 years ago, and I've always thought Malone was a good coach. I thought there were things that were lacking in his coaching. I thought some of the rotations were questionable.
Fair.
I think he was a little reluctant to play younger players and rookies. But I think all of those things are gone.
Mm.
I don't think there are any real major issues with the way Michael Malone coaches a basketball game. I think the in-game management has gotten better. I think the longer view has gotten better. I think as it stands right now, he is as good. Is he as good a coach as Greg Popovich? I don't know. I know his team's done a lot better in the last couple of years. So, I mean, as it stands today, I don't know if there's anyone you can realistically say has been a better coach than Michael Malone or is a better coach than Michael Malone right now. And that's a great sign. The Nuggets get the Grizzlies tonight. They get them at home. They have an opportunity if they win to go up a full game on Oklahoma City.
Right.
And that helps a lot because tomorrow Oklahoma City gets the Pelicans that will be missing Brandon Ingram for at least 2 weeks.
Right.
So you have to assume they'll win. The rested Timberwolves on Wednesday will get the Pistons. You have to assume they'll win. So you find yourself in a spot that is enviable, but it doesn't hold for long. They are only one game ahead of Minnesota and the half ahead of the Thunder. So get the job done against the Grizzlies. You get that whole game ahead. And then, of course, you'll find out how things shake out with the rest of the teams. But you can't control that. All you can do is control the games in front of you. But the Nuggets' final 11 games look more favorable than the two teams that are chasing them.
The dulcet tones of Sean Drotar, who, of course, can be found daily with the great Sandy Clough afternoons here on Mile High Sports. We're off and rolling on a Monday. Actually, bumping down the road. I don't know if we're rolling. We're bumping down the road, but off we go. Don't forget, Roller Auctions Twitter feed, at Bruce Hurdle, at Eric Goodman. On Tuesday, a contractor and rental yard equipment auction featuring Snap-on toolbox and tools, forklifts, livestock fencing, because who couldn't use some livestock fencing? You know, there's one thing out of every single one of these that I love. Livestock fencing is it for me this time. Vehicles, hydro flask, and much more. The auction open at rollerauction.com. When we continue, we're going to switch to the big dance. CU's role in it, and where we go from here. CU had a chance, by the way, yesterday to get to two Sweet 16s. We continue here in just a moment.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silterhar Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silterhar Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
All right, good morning to you. A good Monday to each and every one. Be safe out there on a very slick morning commute as we continue. Alex Becker running the show. Sean Drotar along with yours truly, Bruce Hurdle. As don't forget to get notifications about upcoming options at rollerauction.com. And we continue courtesy of Paramount Siding and Windows of Siding and Windows. On your home, need a makeover, work with the best in town. It's Paramount Siding and Windows, family-owned business since 2009. Has over 500 five-star Google reviews. And Paramount, they do any size project. Unlike the competition, who only want to do big projects, get to ParamountSidingAndWindows.com. Let your windows see the Paramount way. Time now for The Buzz.
The Buzz is presented by Paramount Siding and Windows. Paramount Siding and Windows, it's quality in everything they do. Find them at ParamountSidingAndWindows.com.
All right, see, you had their chances down the stretch in the round of 32 yesterday against Marquette. Tied in the final 3 minutes, they could never get the lead and fall 81-77 in a game that was one part entertaining, another part frustrating. It was just, you wanted CU to, you felt like if they could get a shot to go down, just get the lead for one moment, that it was there for the taking. I'm not saying it wasn't there for the taking. But in the end, they fall, go 2-1 in the tournament, end a season that finishes with 26 wins, which, by the way, is a new program record for a single season. So, Sean, in just about any definition, this was a successful season, wasn't it?
Of course. There's only one team gets to get the championship. Only four get to the Final Four, which is kind of considered a the creme de la creme, and they were close. And look, had they find a way to sneak past Marquette, they would have been the higher seed.
That's
against
the
NC
thing.
State, and maybe you would have had a chance at an Elite Eight berth. But the funny thing is, I did my bracket like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I had CU winning its first game. I had CU beating Florida. And I had CU losing to Marquette.
Marquette's
a really good team.
Yep.
Great guard play. Very, very hard to defend. And I walked away from that feeling really happy about CU's performance, because I think they got where you wanted to get. You know, could, were they good enough to maybe sneak by and get in the Sweet 16? Yes. Think about that. That's extraordinary.
Yes, it is.
And had they gotten there and lost, you still would have looked at it and said, that's tremendous for this team. And then they end up getting to, I think, where they belonged. They got to that round of 32, and they were in it up until the end, losing by four to a team that has stayed in the top 10 all year long in Marquette. I mean, Shaka Smart said it himself after the game, quote, "That's about as good of a 10 seed as I've ever seen in my life." Hmm. We started watching tape a couple days ago and said, "Who made these guys a 10?
I mean, I hear you. Well, I'll tell you what made them a 10 was the Pac-12.
And the fact that they had a very bumpy February.
They really did.
And they really were not strong, but they ended up playing their best ball at the right time, and that's in contrast, and it's not a comparison to the terrific year the Colorado State had, ranked as high as 13th in the country at one point.
Yeah.
But they were not playing their best ball coming into the tournament, and Colorado was.
Yes.
And oftentimes, that's how it goes. When does your team peak? And the Buffs peaked at the right time. It just wasn't quite good enough to get it over Marquette, but I don't find that a surprise. And I think the manner in which they lost, yeah, Cody Williams is going to go pro because he's expected to be a lottery pick. They can lose. They'll lose players like Tristan DeSilva, who I think over the tournament, with no disrespect to KJ Simpson, we'll talk more about him. I thought DeSilva was their best player in the tournament, and I think guys like DeSilva are going to be what they need now moving into the Big 12. They're going to need bigger bodies. They're going to need more bulk. But Eddie Lampkin, even KJ Simpson, Javon Hadley, still have the opportunity with COVID years to maybe come back. Simpson not really getting the love from the NBA that you would maybe expect for
curious,
some reason.
Curious for me. I watch a guy like him and think that he has NBA written on him, but who knows? Maybe I don't understand.
You know, maybe they give it another run next year. But even with those losses, if you're Tad Boyle, you just put a lot on film for recruiting tapes. You put a lot on that Florida win was shown all around the country. That was the game of the day.
Maybe the game of the tournament.
Maybe thus far. Two teams to get to 100 points. The Buffs were the first to crack that. And all of that. And then this is where you hope Cody Williams gets drafted as high as he can.
Yes.
You hope that Tristan DeSilva maybe is a first rounder. And then you take that to other players and say, look, when you want to come to Colorado, do you want to go to the NBA? Well, we do that here in Boulder. We send guys to the NBA and we send guys to the NBA in the first round. Why don't you be next? So even the way it finished, I think very, very a solid program building run. First time you win two games in the tournament since 1955.
Right.
Nothing to complain about, I think, for this CU season.
Let's talk about Cody Williams. You bring him up, and you're right. If you're a lottery pick, you go.
You have to.
Even if you're not ready for the next level, and maybe with truth serum, Cody Williams would admit that.
Because, quite frankly, he's not.
He's
not strong enough.
No.
The game is not refined enough.
No.
But the NBA, for a couple of decades now, drafts on talent alone.
It's all about future.
Future.
It really is. And that's exactly right. So you can be an NBA prospect. It doesn't mean that you're an NBA prospect immediately. You're a G League guy. You're going to cut your teeth. How much similarity do you bring in the parallel paths with Peyton Watson and he? We got a pretty good example of Peyton Watson, a guy who was basically a non-factor.
Lowest points per game of any first-round draft pick ever.
Ever. Think about that. And, I mean, Cody Williams averaged nearly 12 points a game. Cody Williams at least functioned and contributed and played. You could look at him and say, man, he could use another year of seasoning. Well, he's going to get that in the G League, and he's going to get it on NBA time. But do you see any similarities to Peyton Watson?
You know, I really don't because they're so different players.
They are.
For Williams, defense is the worst part of his game.
Yeah.
For Peyton Watson, it's by far the strongest, and it's what got him drafted. The athleticism, I think, is similar. I'll give you that. They're both very athletic guys, and they're long, lanky guys, and they're both, very, very slender. But I think Williams has to put on more weight to be a consistent scorer at the NBA level, and I don't think that Watson necessarily does. So I don't see that much of a a similarity. And Watson, I think, when he was selected by the Nuggets, kind of a shock. A lot of the draft analysts looking at it going, what are they doing? Cody Williams has been considered a lottery pick in high school.
That's a
so
good call.
So the projections, I think, are different. But I see the point you're making in that these guys get picked in the first round and they're not ready to play immediately.
No.
And Cody Williams may be picked very high in the first round as opposed to Watson. And that may be tougher for whatever team selects him because they're going to want to play him big minutes. He's probably not ready for it. But I agree with you. Could he use more seasoning? Yes. Were he to come back and maybe Simpson and Lampkin come back and this team is a Sweet 16 team or maybe better next year, would that raise him in the draft stock? Probably. But how much? If he's going to go in the top 10, which almost every projection says he is, and that might even be conservative, it's going to bring you what, to the top 5? That's where you reach the point as an athlete, unless you're getting monster NIL money. It's Caitlin Clark's decision she'll have to make up. The payoff for making that jump isn't worth it, given the fact that you could suffer a serious injury and lose it. So if you're a top 10 pick, you bolt.
Yeah.
You have to bolt. It would be foolish not to. So they're going to lose Cody Williams. But having a one-and-done guy picked in the top 10 isn't bad for the Buffs either.
No, I agree. It reflects on the
program. Hasn't hurt Kentucky over the year.
Nope.
Or Duke.
Seems to work out, doesn't it?
Or Kansas. Seems fine.
The million-dollar question or multi-million-dollar question in the era of NIL, what about the move to the Big 12? Because as it's going to change in football, and I think CU fans are maybe prematurely a little breathless about the opportunities going to the Big 12. I think the Big 12 will push back just fine in football, but that remains to be seen. I guarantee you it's going to be a harder road to hoe in basketball. Tad Boyle knows this better than anyone else. He played in the then Big 8, coached in that part of the country, understands the fanaticism about basketball. It's a totally different thing than it is really just about anywhere outside of Arizona and to some degree maybe Oregon in the Pac-12.
Right.
It is.
And of course, Arizona's coming with.
And Arizona is coming with. This is a totally different gig and a totally different level of depth than CU has been accustomed to. How much of an adjustment will it be? Even let's take those three guys coming back as the core of this group moving forward, which is a very nice luxury to have, a core of a Sweet 16 team coming back, but the challenges of moving to the Big 12.
Well, that'd be legitimate. I mean, you're talking about Arizona, which is a terrific basketball program. Arizona State, every once in a while, bumps up and down. Utah has been consistently pretty competitive.
Yep.
And you add that to a Big 12 that is already stacked with other teams that are very, very talented. I mean, all you have to do is look across the tournament. How many Big 12 teams are left? How many Pac-12 teams are left?
Right.
The answer for the Pac-12 teams is one.
Arizona. Yeah.
And it's coming with.
Yeah,
so,
and it's going with, right.
So you're talking about, basically the top team in the Pac-12 is now adding the Big 12. So, yeah, it's going to be a tougher conference. But I guess I look at it and say, hey, those are the breaks. We're rapidly going into the super conference era. And you're either lucky to be in one or you're unlucky to be out of one. You're Washington State, you're Oregon State, now left holding the bag. And you have to accept that you're bumping up to a new level. This is like, soccer teams getting promoted to the Premier League in England all of a sudden. You're like, cool, that was great. You won those other, but guess what you got now? Now you're with Man City and Man U and Arsenal and all those squads.
Exactly.
And you better be ready to step up. Now, the bright side is, I think you hit it right there with Tad Boyle. He already knows that.
He does.
And the ability to grab a guy like Eddie Lampkin to transfer from a Big 12 school, mind you.
TCU.
So finding a way to transfer in. I think he's in a position to succeed there. And I think Colorado, and yes, Deion Sanders factors in this, Colorado as a program, not just basketball, not just men's or women's, we'll talk about them as well, but football, the University of Colorado's visibility and appeal is exponentially better than it was 2 to 3 years ago. And Tad Boyle and the men's basketball program does benefit from some of that. Now you have kids that 18 months ago you had called from Boulder and they're like, I don't know anything about Boulder. They know now, even if it has nothing to do with basketball. And it makes basketball recruiting easier. So Boyle knows what he's doing. He's aware of what it entails. And I think he'll be as ready as you can be to make that leap.
All right, we're going to take a break, get back on schedule when we come back to see you women. Are you watching women's basketball? Because I've got a matchup for you potentially in the next round that will be, I'm saying it right now, can't miss. Period. Can't miss. The continuing remarkable story on the ebb and flow of CU women's basketball as we continue. Sean Drotar, yours truly. Alex takes us to break. This is AM Drive, Monday Morning Drive, right here on Mile High Sports.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silterhar Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silterhar Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
Eric off for a few very well-deserved days off. You'll be back on Thursday, Sean Drotar, in this morning, and will be for the next couple of days. Pleased to have him. As we get to now the final, or excuse me, What's Trending.
What's Trending is presented by Roller Auctions. Get what you want at the price you want. Go to rollerauction.com/MHS, and they'll send you notifications on their latest auctions.
We're going to do our due diligence on CU Women coming up in hour number two, because we're pushed against the clock here in hour number one. But I wanted to give credit where it was due. And J.R. Payne, I think, Sean, is one of my favorite coaches in the area. I love her manner. I love her accountability. I love her toughness and her softness in the same mixed up, jungled sort of way that coaches have got to operate. She's obviously a very good psychologist, but there's accountability in the program. And this is a CU team that lost 6 of 8 games down the stretch.
Right.
Now, that's a little misleading, because 5 of those 6 losses were to ranked teams. The losing margin in those 6 games was only 5 points. It's not like they were playing poorly. They just weren't winning basketball games. But they turned it around, beat a veteran-laden Drake team in the first round in Manhattan, Kansas, during that regional play. Then they turn around to beat a team that was ranked as high as number 2 in the country on their home floor, where, by the way, they've only lost 1 game all season. And they did it with a 15-3 run to close the third quarter and handled their business in the fourth. It was, to me, the best feel-good moment of the day yesterday, and that's even with the Avs coming from 4-0 down, because isn't that what the Avs always do?
Seems like it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later, too. But let's just give a little love where it's due. Good for the CU women. Consecutive Sweet 16s. More than likely a matchup with Iowa and Caitlin Clark coming up in the Sweet 16. This is great stuff.
It is. And when you talk about that Kansas State game, keep in mind, in the second half, they held Kansas State to 15 points.
15.
Also, in the second half, 11 turnovers. 15 points, 11 turnovers. Yeah. Almost as many turnovers as points for a team, as you pointed out, that was at one point ranked second. They held them to 22% shooting in the second half. And that's why that if they do indeed, the winner of the Iowa-West Virginia game today will get Colorado in the Sweet 16. If it does end up being Iowa and Caitlin Clark, that's why CU has a better chance than I believe a lot of people think, because they are so good defensively. Yep. And unlike Iowa, which is outstanding and obviously could very well win the national title, their offense is diversified. Yesterday, when you're talking about the Buff starters, all 5 of their starters had 9 or more points. Mm-hmm. The team leader had 11, and Sadler off the bench had 10. So you almost had 6 players. You were 3 points away from having 6 players in double figures. So when you have a diversified offense where a bunch of people can get going and score for you, and you can play that kind of defense where, I think as close as you can say, lockdown in basketball, when you hold K-State to 22%, you will have a chance. if you end up facing Clark and Iowa. Now, they have a couple of other good players as well. Martin had 14 rebounds in their opener. But I think CU would really stand a good chance against Iowa and maybe would be a better matchup than a lot of people believe if we remember what happened in the opening game of the year in which they shocked LSU.
Yep.
As well, a team that was expected to roll Colorado. And that, again, is where J.R. Payne's done such a terrific job. I remember in that LSU win, it was so impressive. Shaquille O'Neal, LSU himself,
right,
was at the game.
Right.
Requested to come into the Buffs locker room and congratulate them.
Which is so cool, man. So cool.
I mean, that shows the style of play when you watch what the CU women are doing. The people who know basketball and live basketball know that's sustainable. That's dangerous basketball. They've already knocked off LSU. They could do it to Iowa, too.
They have the cred of beating teams like LSU, Stanford, USC, UCLA, teams that could play long and deep into this tournament. We'll talk more about them coming up in hour number two. All right, up against it, Alex, what do we have coming up in the final word?
The Rockies extended one of their young cornerstones for 7 years, and we'll discuss this Avs winger who is playing arguably the best hockey of his career right now. That's all next on Morning Drive on Mile High Sports. You get what you need.
Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
Sean Drotar in for Eric today. He'll be back on Thursday. Morning Drive brought to you by Roller Auctions. The Roller Auctions Twitter feed at Bruce Hurdle, at Eric Goodman. Don't forget, on Tuesday, a contractor rental yard equipment auction. For more information, go to rollerauction.com. Time now for the final word.
The final word. Are you ready? Presented by Sasquatch Casino in Blackhawk. Just in case you missed it. Presented by Mountain High Appliance, Colorado's favorite appliance store for 25 years in Louisville, Colorado Springs, and now open in their new store in Littleton. Go to mountainhighappliance.com.
All righty, guys. Just in case you missed it, some Rockies news yesterday as the club and shortstop Ezekiel Tovar are in agreement on a 7-year contract extension worth $63.5 million. This comes with a 1-year club option. The club option would take his earnings up to $84 million if it's exercised. Did the Rockies get this one right with Ezekiel Tovar?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Very much kind of patterned along with the deal that they did with Ermon Marquez. That was a good team-friendly deal. Look, Tovar is a guy. I think he can be a gold glove shortstop at this level. He's got a little pop. His strikeout ratio is still way too high. But still at the age of 22, he's not a mature hitter. I thought that this was a good signing for the Rockies. They're essentially going to avoid arbitration with this guy, and it's a good team-friendly deal.
Yeah, the Rockies haven't announced it, but multiple reports, including right out, Tovar is Venezuelan. The Venezuelan reporter Daniel Alvarez Montes ends up breaks that. It's a good move for the Rockies. There are things that Tovar has to get a lot better at.
Yep.
First one would be balls and strikes.
Yep.
The strikeout-to-walk ratio has got to get way better, but you're exactly right. You're talking about a young guy. He'll be with the team through the 2030 season. He is certainly one of their core building blocks. What they're building, I don't know. We'll find out because the Rockies, believe it or not, start their season on Thursday.
It may be the most anonymous beginning of the season that I can ever remember. It's just
no TV
remarkable.
Contract, 100 losses. Just... Nobody knows who the players are. Otherwise, it's great.
Alrighty, just in case you missed it, I know we'll talk some more Avs here in hour two, but the winger Jonathan Drouin has 14 points in his last 11 games for the team, including yesterday's overtime winner against the Penguins. Drouin seems to be playing the best hockey of his career right now. Are you happy to see the recent success for Jonathan Drouin, who kind of started the season rather slow?
Well, yeah, I'm happy for it, but it's another win for? It's another win for Nathan MacKinnon, who continues to do everything for this team. Not only score goals, assists, set new records, score in 34 straight home games, 18 straight games and counting as we speak right now. But he also delivers his buddy Jonathan Drouin with a guarantee that he's not going to be the washout that he was in Montreal. And now he's going to deliver. And by the way, he did it twice yesterday with the game winner and another goal. Jonathan Drouin has paid dividends all because Nathan MacKinnon pounded the table for him with Chris McFarland and Joe Sakic.
And the Avalanche were patient, because give this to Drouin now, because not only, yes, is he on the team in part because Nathan MacKinnon pushed for it? Yes. But he's done this himself. He's not on Nathan MacKinnon's line anymore. He's sitting on that second line with Mittelstadt and Lehkonen. He's done this himself. He's earned it. He looks like the top 10 draft pick that he was. And the Avalanche have found themselves, it's not a diamond in a rough, but they made a gamble on a guy. And you know what? They've done that before. Valeri Nichushkin was the 10th overall pick. Sometimes it takes the talent a bit to percolate. Sometimes you got to get him in the right spot. If you want to talk about it, it can happen at any age. Just ask Sean Walker with the goal as well. At the age of 29,
A
defenseman, all of a sudden going off as a member of the Avalanche, who have won 9 straight games.
Which is a pretty good tease for the top of the second hour. We're going to get to all things Avs. The final word, courtesy of Mountain High Appliance, just in case you missed it. Don't forget locations, Louisville, Colorado Springs, and at Littleton. Back in a moment, we're going to talk hockey. The Ice Age is real, both literally and figuratively, as we continue on a Monday morning. Keep your contributions by your side. Strong fist, don't be. Could be a winner, boy, and move.